All right, now some self-imposed curses. People who pronounce curses on themselves. We're going back to Genesis 27. Genesis 27, verses 11 through 13. Here we are again in this very significant scene where Jacob, in a sense, swindles his way into the blessing. But believe me, it was expensive for everybody involved. Now, Rebekah, who's the contriver of this whole thing, has a dialogue with Jacob. Jacob really didn't want to do it, but his mother persuaded him. I have to say, and I hope this will not offend anybody, Rebekah to me is the first Yiddish mama. She really tried to arrange for everybody in her household, her husband, her sons, and so on. She's the real first manipulating, scheming wife and mother. And she has a long line of descendants, not all Jewish. And she got everybody into trouble. I want you to know that. All right. So Jacob says, I don't want to do this. I'm scared. It's not that I don't want the blessing, but he said, if my father gets to know who I am, instead of getting blessed, I'll get cursed. Jacob answered his mother, Rebekah, behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and then I shall be as a deceiver in his sight, and I shall bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing. But his mother said to him, your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me. She died. She never saw her son alive again. She pronounced a curse on herself. Your curse be on me. You read the story. She never set eyes on Jacob from the time he left. She lost her son out of her life. Frightening. And then one that I'm always reluctant to look to, but it's so very clear in Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27, at the trial of Jesus. Verses 24 through 26. When Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves. Now, he was not innocent because he was the judge. And all the people answered and said, his blood be on us and on our children. And the scripture says the next word is then. Then he released Barabbas for them. That was a curse pronounced by themselves, upon themselves, 19 centuries of history. Bear testimony. It's a tragedy, but it's there. It's not a curse that cannot be reversed, because Jesus opened the way when he prayed, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. But nevertheless, it's a self-pronounced curse. All right. Now, we have dealt, in case you haven't been following or you got too involved, we've dealt with curses pronounced by God himself, with curses pronounced by men on behalf of God, curses pronounced by persons with relational authority in a family, for instance. The last kind of curse, curses that are the product of satanic influence. Notice, up to this time, they haven't been. And I want to look at two kinds of curses that we may have to face. The first is what I call emotional reviling, where people get mad at us and start to curse us. That probably happens quite frequently in the United States, but it's very, very common in the Middle East. I could give you the standard Arabic curses, because living in an Arab village, I got to know them. They usually center on cursing the person's father. And you'll hear any little Arab child repeating them. The Arabs are a people who curse. As a matter of fact, I remember just about the time the State of Israel was coming into being, Lydia was walking through the streets of Jerusalem, and at that time, many Jewish people spoke Arabic rather than Hebrew. But in order to be patriotic, they had now decided they were going to give up talking Arabic and speak Hebrew. So Lydia was walking on the street, and she heard two Jewish men arguing and cursing one another in Arabic. So she said to them in Arabic, she said, "I thought you were supposed not to speak Arabic any longer." And one of them answered her, "It's good enough to curse in anyhow." Well, I don't want to be misunderstood, but Arabic is a language given to cursing. A lot of things that one says, one just picks up, are curses if one doesn't know them. Now, dealing with what I call emotional curses, which are probably demonic, in other words, there's a demon behind that, I believe it's important we understand how to protect ourselves. And I think the protection consists in immediately adopting the right attitude. Let me look at three passages of Scripture. Romans 12 and verse 14. Bless those who persecute you, bless and curse not. I believe that basically we have to overcome the negative by the positive. I think that's summed up in the last verse of that chapter. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Really, in such a situation, you're either going to give way to evil or you're going to overcome it with good. There's no third option. So, when somebody curses you, reviles you, you may not do it out loud, but bless them. Take a positive attitude. Keep your own spirit clear. 1 Corinthians 4:12. Speaking about the apostles, Paul says, "We toil, working with our own hands. When we are reviled, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure." See, basically, you've got to do something. Jesus said, when someone strikes you on one cheek, turn the other. The natural thing is hit them back. The spiritual thing is turn the other cheek. But the big mistake is to do neither. If you hit them back, you've released it. If you turn the other cheek, you've released it. If you just let it boil inside, you've started a problem. So don't imagine that in such a situation you can be neutral. You're either going to be positive or negative. One other scripture, all of them bring out the same point. 1 Peter 3:9. And we could go into the background, but it's not necessary, really. Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. Okay, so when we are cursed, what do? Bless, that's right. It may not change the attitude of the person who's cursing, but it will ensure our own spiritual purity. Now, the other kind of curse that's satanic in origin comes from what I call the professional. And it's planned. That is the servant of Satan. And I don't know whether you're so naive as not to know that this nation and all our Western culture is filled with professional servants of Satan. Witches, wizards, fortune tellers, mediums, and so on. Now they are serving Satan by choice. A lot of them serve Satan because they think he's the strongest person around. Many, many people do not realize that the Lord is stronger than the devil. Particularly in Africa, I discovered in dealing with Africans, they have been brought up to know the power of the devil. That's in their background. Don't go to them and tell them there isn't a devil. That's silly. And in a crisis, many, many Africans, even if they're born again Christians, will turn back to the devil for help. And mind you, it's not without some basis in experience, because the devil does do things for people with limits, with strings attached. In the long run, you'll be sorry. But in the short run, there are results, often. There are far more professional practitioners of Satan in Germany today than there are Christian ministers. And Germany is, you know, obviously a very highly cultivated, progressive society by materialistic standards. In fact, much of Europe is absolutely riddled with professional servants of Satan. I was hearing about one of the most successful hamburger chains, which I will not name. In a certain area in North Carolina, there is a center for training witches. I mean, it's not secret, it's there. I don't want to name names. The witches in training went to this particular hamburger outlet and wanted their hamburgers black on one side and raw on the other. And the people cooking them refused to do them that way. So the witches put a curse on the hamburger store. It's out of business. It folded up. And yet, every other part of the country, it's successful. Don't imagine that you're not encountering these things at pretty close quarters, because you are. A fellowship that's very close to me, many of you know the name of the leader, was deliberately infiltrated by the local witches' coven. They sent one of their top witches to profess a desire to become a member of the fellowship, to show interest in the things of God. And she was instructed to put curses on the people in the fellowship, particularly the leaders and their families, and in particularly in the realm of their health. And the leader himself, who is one of the most committed Christians I know, nearly died of a strange, unexpected internal problem. His wife developed a malignancy, and his son was born 2.5 months premature. Now they are all doing well. But believe me, that was not unconnected with that invasion. We are not dealing with theories. If you're walking around with your eyes shut, you're liable to fall into a pit and then wonder how you got there. We are surrounded by enemies. If you think this is new, just take time to read the Psalms of David sometime and read the countless times he appeals to God for help against his enemies. And you and I can echo every one of those prayers with appropriate application. We're just as much surrounded by enemies as David was. Okay, we'll take just one example, the very outstanding example of Balaam. Balaam was called a soothsayer, which is the old-fashioned word. He's called a diviner in the modern translations. He had a reputation. He had a large clientele. Numbers 22. Israel has arrived on the borders of their inheritance, and Moab is very uneasy because of this tremendous influx of people. And so they want to do something against Israel, and they know they can't defeat them by warfare, so they go to the occult. And to me, I think it's very significant. This is the final obstacle that Israel had to overcome before entering the Promised Land. And I think it's no accident the final obstacle was the occult. I think it's probably true with us today. Numbers 22, verse 4 through 6. Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this horde will lick up all that is around us." This horde is Israel. "As the ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak the son of Zippor was king of Moab at that time. So he sent messengers to Balaam the son of Beor at Pethor, which is near the river, that's the Euphrates, in the land of the sons of his people, to call him, to invite him, saying, "Behold, the people came out of Egypt. Behold, they covered the surface of the land, and they are living opposite me. Now, therefore, please come, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." That was his reputation. It worked. Now, I don't want to go into the details of that. You can read it for yourself. Let me just say that none of this has gone out of date. One of my African students is a committed Christian. In fact, he's the one that's referred to in my book, Shaping History. Wilson Mambaleo told me this story himself. In his village, way back in the hills, what's called the Kisi Hills, two families in the village quarreled. And so they did what was natural. One of them went to the local witch doctor and said, "Put a hex on that other family." And they gave him a goat or whatever it was they had to pay. And the witch doctor, he must have been a very acute psychologist. He said, "All right, at midnight on a certain night, a jackal will cry in the village, and then the son of this family will die." Well, believe me, when midnight came, that family was cowering in terror in their hut. A jackal cried, and the child died, probably of pure fright. But I mean, that's the way it works. Pay me, I'll curse your enemy. That's it. This is goes back to here, what's that, 3,500 years ago. It's something that's gone on through human history, and it's more active today, perhaps, than at any previous time in human history, like all the spiritual forces, good and evil. Now, I want to close this morning by speaking about forms that curses take. And the great standard example is found in Deuteronomy chapter 28. The first 14 verses are blessings, and the remaining approximately 54 verses are curses. By the time you've read that chapter carefully, you have a good picture of which are blessings and which are curses. It's important because I believe a lot of Christians are enduring curses when they should be enjoying blessings, and they don't even know that what they have is a curse and not a blessing. Now, what is the great basic reason for curses and blessings? They're given in this chapter very clearly. Deuteronomy 28, beginning of verse 1, opening up the blessings. And I have to say that both the NIV and the NASB, unfortunately, use a rather unsatisfactory translation. The King James is better. And the NASB, which I'm reading, is right in the margin. "Now it shall be, if you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and be careful to do all his commandments." So what's the source of all blessings? Listening to the voice of the Lord and doing what he says. All blessings ultimately go back to that original source. What's the source of all the curses? Very simple. Verse 15. "But it shall come about, if you will not listen to the voice of the Lord your God." Okay? Cursed, 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 cursed. So the basic issues are very, very simple. Listening and doing brings blessing. Failing to listen brings curses. After all, if you don't listen, you can't do, because you won't know what to do. So that's the starting point. And it's like a watershed. You know what a watershed is? I discovered when somebody took me to the Rockies in Colorado years ago. They pointed out westward and they said, that's the watershed, the continental divide of the United States. And I built a picture in my mind, what happened to two little drops of rain that fell 2 inches apart, one on the east and one on the west. And although they were only 2 inches apart when they fell, their destinies were thousands of miles apart, because they were on opposite sides of the watershed, the continental divide. One would end in the Gulf of Mexico, the other in the Pacific Ocean. That's how you and I determine our destiny. You may be sitting a few inches away from the person next to you, and yet you may be on opposite sides of the continental divide that will determine your destiny. What is the continental divide? If thou wilt diligently listen to the voice of the Lord. That's it. Some listen, some don't. Which are you? Now, if you go through that list of blessings and curses, it'll take you a long while. It's worth doing. I'm going to read you a summation of both, a summation of the blessings and a summation of the curses, which will only take me a minute or two. The following is my summary of the blessings in verses 1 through 14. Exaltation, exaltation, being lifted up. Health, reproductiveness, prosperity, victory, and God's favor. I'll read them again. Exaltation, health, reproductiveness, prosperity, victory, in God's favor. And I mean, I invite you to check for yourself. You would do well to see if you agree with my summation. Now, on the other side, this is the curses. Humiliation, mental and physical sickness, family breakdown, poverty, defeat, oppression, failure, and God's disfavor. I'll read them once more. Humiliation, mental and physical sickness, family breakdown, poverty, defeat, oppression, failure, and God's disfavor. In closing, I will also list the evidences of a curse which I have discovered by personal experience. This is a subjective list. It's based merely on what I've discovered through dealing with people. It isn't theology, it's experience. However, if your theology doesn't work in experience, you better do something about it. And I have six. Number one, mental and emotional breakdown. And we're thinking mainly now in terms of families, though it's not excluding individuals. But I'm thinking in terms of if within your knowledge of your family's background and history, there are several examples of any of these things. Number two, repeated or chronic sicknesses, especially without clear medical diagnosis. Number three, repeated miscarriages or related female problems. Number four, breakdown of marriage and family alienation, which really go together. But it's more than just husband and wife being divorced. There's bad relationships between parents and children, between brothers and sisters, and so on. Number five, continuing financial insufficiency, especially where the income appears sufficient. That's a remarkable thing, but I've dealt with many people. According to all the figures, they should be able to make it, but they never quite did. There was a member of my family who's with the Lord now. I don't want to name him, but it's very vivid to me. He died in great suffering, very boldly, bravely endured. But about a week before he died, there appeared at the foot of his bed an old man in rags and just stood there. And I remember him saying I had to tell him to go several times before he disappeared. And I didn't hesitate. I knew immediately that was poverty. And looking back, although at many times he made absolutely sufficient for the needs of himself and his family, they never really ever had enough. It was so vivid to me. I mean, he was so matter-of-fact about it. He was far from being out of his mind, or he was very, very sober. And I often think, when I hear people's stories, there's that old man in rags somewhere in your background. And then the sixth I mentioned already, being accident prone. That was true of the same member of my family. He had an incredible history of improbable accidents. In fact, although he was an expert motor mechanic, he gave up driving his car and let his wife drive him. I mean, there's something so vivid to me, I could speak about that one situation for half an hour without running out of material. His mother was a spiritist, and he never really forgave her. That's, if ever there's a lesson in my life about making sure your attitude to your parents is right, that's it. I'll read them again and then we'll close for this morning. Now, I apologize for ending on a negative note. But... All right, number one, mental and emotional breakdown. Number two, repeated or chronic sicknesses, especially without clear medical diagnosis. Number three, repeated miscarriages or related female problems. Like women that have real problems at the times of their periods. Number four, breakdown of marriage and family alienation. Number five, continuing financial insufficiency, especially where the income appears sufficient. And number six, being accident prone.
If you would like information about further teaching resources available from Derek Prince Ministries UK, please call us and request a copy of our latest resource guide on 01462 492 100. You may also visit our website at www.dpmuk.org or write to us at DPM UK, Kingsfield, Hadrian Way, Baldock, SG7 6AN.